Greetings, friends of Essential Aromatica. This episode is another spotlight on aromatherapy with my very special guest, Kathy Skipper. Kathy is an international teacher, plant person, and healer who brings 30 years of teaching, healing, and plant experience, her highly attuned intuition, and her mastery at seeing the person within to all of her work. And to quote her, "All my work is based on my own journey as a wounded healer. I coach and teach from a place of experience. I am totally familiar with navigating the unconscious realms, the ancestral realms, the plant and animal realms. I am a menopause midwife, helping women rebirth themselves as they go through the initiation of menopause and into their wise eldership." That intro I wish was so much longer. Kathy is such an amazing and inspiring person. So please check her out. Learn more about her work at aromagnosis.com and kathysattars.com. This is all in the show notes. You'll see where to click. Also on YouTube at aromagnosis. And then on Instagram, personally as Kathy.Skipper, and then for her alchemical work, The Alchemy of Menopause, that's the_alchemy_of_menopause on Instagram. So without further ado, Kathy, thank you so much for spending time with me today.
It's a pleasure. I'm looking forward to this conversation. I always like the conversations we had. So here's a chance for another one after a bit of a gap.
Just a tiny gap, but you look, we could see each other, and Kathy is in New Mexico and has been for a few years, right?
Yeah, I've been here now for 7 years. The cycle has been completed and I'm home, well and truly home.
Oh, that's true, right? So cycles of seven. That yeah. is a legit awesome thing, the power of the number seven.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, I just like a little general banter, but before I get into my crafted questions, okay. You told me that you travel a lot, right? And you're traveling to Portland just like tomorrow or the day after. You do a lot of traveling, right?
We did a lot of traveling before COVID. Most of our work was live. So we traveled all over the world, to Taiwan, to Austria, to France, to Brazil, all around the States. And then COVID hit and we did what everybody did and we slithered onto Zoom. And actually it was a great thing because we were getting very tired and it enabled us to anchor. We renovated our earth ship and I'm a true introvert. So COVID for me was the biggest gift. Sorry, everybody. I know it was also a very traumatic event. But in terms of buckling in and coming home to the self, there wasn't anything better for me. And so it enabled me to start writing my book and make a lot of content and think a lot about where we're heading and what's important to us. So we don't travel that much, but we are traveling. It's the first time in a year. Last year, we did the same class, well, a different theme, but for the same group. So we've only ever been to Portland, Maine since COVID.
I do want to share, because I couldn't say this a lot, just I'm simpatico during COVID. I am an introvert as well. I'm a very private person, believe it or not, I'm out there like many people are on Instagram and all that stuff. But I appreciate the inwardness and the time alone. I did very well during COVID.
Yes, me too.
Well, before I get to the first question, you mentioned your book. So for our listeners, what book were you working on?
I'm working on a book. The theme of the book is decolonizing the mother line. Mm. And it's a memoir. So it's a harder book than a book like the workbook that I wrote on the alchemy of menopause, because it's really a very inward book about my journey of healing through the mother line and rediscovering this mother line that my mum had lied about and kept us very much in the dark about. And so it's really about the feminine and how soul and the feminine for me comes through the mother line, from the earth, through the mitochondrial DNA, into this life force, like the Chinese say, it comes into the kidneys, our essence, our embodied essence, our feminine essence, comes through the earth, through the mitochondrial DNA that creates a channel in every member of the mother line, and then pushes us with this vital life force through the adrenals, really, into life. So it's about healing that lineage and how it enabled me to find myself.
I can't, it's something that we will look forward to when you're ready to publish it.
I'm getting there. I'm in the second act. So, you know, the hardest bit is over, which is really actually committing to daily writing.
Yeah, but a lot of your work is about femininity and this menopause, perimenopause. I know we'll get into that. So all your work is interrelated. So this is yet another part of the your journey and sharing. Yeah. Wow. Exciting. So everyone be sure to check out everything that Kathy and her spouse Florian have going on online. So to get to my first formal question, that I feel like when I write questions, I'm like, it's a paragraph. But so I first had the pleasure of meeting you in Tagush to be really inspired by you at the New York Institute of Aromatherapy. You came and gave a workshop. And you have a lot of knowledge and body of work around plants and herbalism. It's been a lifelong journey for you, if I understand that correctly. And for well over a decade, I believe, you have honed in on working with the psyche and transitions. And within that, you include aromatics, specifically essential oils. Now, the audience of this podcast is aromatherapy enthusiasts, essential oil enthusiasts. So please share your thoughts on why essential oils in particular may be powerful allies for working with emotions and the psyche.
Absolutely. Well, I think it would be good to give a bit of background. So, you know, I trained at the École de Plantes Lyonnaise, which is a big herbal school in Lyon, which I then went on to become a teacher at. And I always found I was slightly having to put myself into a size of box or a form of box that didn't completely suit me, because in France, it's very clinical. They're terrified because they haven't dealt with, in my opinion, they haven't dealt with the what happened with the witchcraft trials, where France was one of the countries where most women were killed as being witches, and they haven't dealt with it. So there's this shadow in the psyche. So you have to be extremely scientific, extremely clinical, extremely un-woo-woo, which is fine, but and it was a good training. But my natural leaning is to what is underpinning, what is underlying people's difficulties and challenges in life? What is it? What's the story that is causing physical difficulties, emotional difficulties? And so my path in aromatherapy, you know, I did a lot of teaching about the chemistry of aromatherapy, et cetera, and then suddenly, actually, I had a big life change. So when I arrived 7 years ago in the States, I'd already been working on healing the healer and starting to allow this work into my life. But I had a cancer diagnosis and a lot of things changed in my life. And I went into the underworld myself on a deep journey. And the oils accompanied me really, really deeply. And at the same time, I met and married my husband, Florian, who introduced me to alchemy and depth psychology. So I had this framework. So it wasn't woo-woo. The framework of the alchemical stages is extremely effective. And with the oils combined, I was able to truly delve for, I would say, 5 or 6 years. I spent most of my time in the underworld unearthing my own story. And the oils were one of the very powerful guides that accompanied me on this journey. I could talk about why they, how they work if you want to, but that's how I got there.
Yeah, it's, thank you for sharing your story, because I mean, I appreciate how you were listening to yourself and you're studying, you studied herbalism, you were a teacher, you studied aromatherapy, but you're like, the box isn't right. And then you finally came into this different framework that you're still making your own. It's like Absolutely. You have the frame, and then you're like, well, this is going to fit in this way, like yeah. the oils. Right.
That's what I love about life, is that we're always evolving. It's the gift that keeps on giving. You know, I'm just preparing for this class in Portland, and it's about the wounded healer. Well, the wound is always there. It's how much of it you make conscious and how you work with it. And then it becomes who you are and what you have to offer to the world. And it's always evolving. So at the moment, I'm really going much more deeply into a sort of, you know, I know in America, they don't like the word shamanism. It's actually a Russian word, a Siberian word. It comes from Europe. And I don't even believe that the native people here used that word. But anyway, let's say, I don't know what other word to use, but this deep journeying into the self is becoming much more important to me in my work. And I'm daring to actually lead women into these places of the feminine, which, you know, you could say are affiliated with the dark goddess, but I believe there's a deep part of the feminine psyche that has been abandoned by all women in the dominant culture, because the dominant culture cannot accept a certain part of what it is to be feminine. And the work we have to do now is to go down and reclaim this part of ourselves, which is scary work, because we're still being structured by a dominant patriarchal culture. Mm-hmm. So the oils are great for this, especially the root oils, I must say.
Well, we're going to weave through this conversation, because I've had questions and you'll answer them. So I'm going to bring this to something I had on a personal note, and this doesn't have to be about me.
Yeah.
But after just recently, I listened to recently, you had a, you were with Elizabeth Ashley, and you gave a talk on essential oils for menopause. That, check it out, folks, that's available on YouTube. And in this, you talk about the dark goddess and things you were just touching on now, and root oils. And for years, I have had this tepid fascination in relationship with Hecate and with Angelica root. And I go back to Angelica to this day a couple times a year. It's in my garden every year for years, and I don't know why. And I'm still trying to figure that out. And I was wondering, because you work with Angelica, I think you sell
Absolutely.
Angelica.
Yeah, Angelica seed and Angelica root from my friend in France. I would say the first thing that comes to mind, and this is personal about you, is that Hecate is really the goddess of the crossroads of, you know, she is that liminal space. That's why she went and helped when Persephone had been abducted into the underworld, because she could navigate both the underworld and the above world. So she's really good, you know, at those places, the edges, the intermediary places, the liminal spaces. And I think, you know, these dark goddesses all have something in common, and that is that they are the goddesses of life, birth, and rebirth, you know, life, death, and rebirth, sorry. But each one has her own sort of texture and signature. And so for you, you know, what I know of you is I think you are someone who navigates the liminal spaces. And so probably in your journey as a woman, it's now bringing that to consciousness and saying, that's good, that's fine, that's who I am, that's where my superpower is. So Hecate is like a mother to you in that, because she enables you to have a role model, have someone who can guide the psyche. She's the archetype of that. And then, you know, the different root medicines. So Angelica is very much that as well, because when you look at Angelica, even the plant, all parts of her are aromatic, which is beautiful. And she has something very, when I was teaching in France, we used to take the herbal students every year to the Alps for a long time. Many years I went there, and they'd come for a week and then there'd be another group. And they were all young herbalists. And it was funny, because a lot of them didn't know the plants yet, but they all wanted to see Angelica. But Angelica isn't a plant you could easily see. She grows by the riverside, or it's sort of slightly in the shade. She's not there a lot. When she is, you know, you really have to look for her. But she calls to the psyche, because she's such a powerful being. And so, you know, I would say to you, Angelica and Hecate are your you know, they're part of your toolbox. They're part of your entourage, is a better word in French. They're part of what should guide you and accompany you because they resonate with who you are.
I really appreciate that. And I think that's a really great way for people, for us to think about relating to essential oils and plants. Like if you're drawn to them, maybe, and you've said this, that these plants are teachers and they show up at the right times and we're supposed to pay attention.
Absolutely.
Right? So if this certain plant keeps knocking at my door, I just have to work with it more, pay attention to it. And I think for folks that are listening, it's like, it's a reminder, like if lemon balm's always on your radar, pay attention or something, I don't know.
You know about Angelica because you grow it. So, mm-hmm. you know, if we go back to Hecate and this idea of liminal spaces or in between the worlds, well, the thing about Angelica is that she has these beautiful aromatic roots, which are usually what is distilled. Mm-hmm. But she has this powerful, very straight and quite thick, hollow stem, which is where the energies go from the roots up the stem into the flower, into the seeds, which are her future, and back down again when, you know, at the end of the second year where, you know, the energy comes back down and that umbel is gone because the seeds have been laid. So that's, you know, looking at the plant, I think one of the things that's very important, especially in the aromatherapy world, is we mustn't hook onto the bottles of essential oils as the medicine. We have to look at the plants before, or if you're going to buy a bottle of essential oil, don't use it blindly. Go to the plant, look at it. Even if you can't find it in nature, you can look at it online now. You look at its roots, look at its flowers, look at its stalk, look at how the elements affect it, look at how it moves, look at how it grows. You do that a lot because you're a gardener. Yeah. But, you know, even if you're not a gardener, you can look online, you can discover it, because it's really the plant that has the information.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And it's true. It's like, as a student, I think we're eager. We want to know, and we look at the books. And I realized, you know, through great teachers like yourselves and my own learning, we have to pay attention and do the work ourselves. And something I'm really pleased to share is I was working on something and I'm now putting it out into the world more, called Luna Aroma. And I was looking at seasonal lunar times, my lunar time and seasonal themes, and pairing an essential oil. But that's aside, I was looking for the information when I'm like, Amy, give yourself permission to write down what you're observing. And Kathy, I felt so liberated, and all it was a mindset shift, but it felt so powerful.
Yeah, I think that's very important for people to hear. And that's where we allow this deep feminine part of ourselves to, we have a blueprint inside us. We know what it is to be connected to the earth, to be part of the earth. But to fit into a patriarchal society, we've often sort of suppressed that or alienated that. So just allowing this inner wisdom of what it is to be a woman on the planet, that's all we have to do, is believe in ourselves.
Yeah, but it takes some time for us to get there.
Absolutely. And I will say, you know, I often give this analogy, you know, people doing great abstract art, they have been through art school where they had to learn to do very technical, you know, figure drawing, where they had to work with color on a very technical level, where, you know, they've been through the rigor. And then they can let go. And I think it's the same in the plant world. You know, we have to know the basics. It's the ground. We have to have a training. We have to know the chemistry. But then there comes a point when we can let go.
Yeah, and that the sense of play, when I think about the work that you do in the Young Conscious, it's having that sense of letting go and playing. And is it fair to say that with the work you're doing and the feminine and the archetypes, is it okay to say we're trying to release that inner child, that playfulness, and letting go in that sense?
She's a part of it. She's a part, because the inner child in a dominant culture learns very quickly that there's parts of her that aren't welcome. And there are parts of her that she has to develop to get good marks or whatever. So reclaiming that part of us is part of the journey. Becoming whole is it's a many lifetime journey, and it's very multifaceted. One part is the inner child, and playfulness is really important. There's an art as well to letting go of what we know, because it's there anyway, and bringing what you said, you know, this personal connection to whatever you're doing. That's the art. That's when something becomes an art. And I think we are artists. I think true healers are artists.
Yeah, within that, the artist, you have a sense of nuance. You have your, like you said, the formal training. My microphone keeps going in and out, which is...
You sound fine to me.
Okay. So I'm going to just pause for 1 second.
Yeah.
Okay.
Edit.
Why is this doing this? Okay.
I can hear you perfectly, but I don't know whether you can hear me.
There's an in and out. I have a new docking station.
Let me go inside. Let me go inside because it might be the wind.
No, it's not you. This is a docking station issue.
Okay.
So I don't do any editing other than I will cut that part out.
Okay.
All right. So I do want to bring up a point that people can go to your website, and I wanted to ask about your essential oils. You made a conscious decision to offer essential oils through Kathy's Attars. And I imagine a lot of work goes into finding these oils, who you get them through. You don't have to share your secrets, but what led you to say, hey, I want to offer this, you know, because there's so many oils out on the market, and I have one of your sandalwoods right here, but I'd love to hear about your decision.
Well, I made several decisions. If you look on our website, on the blog, we made a manifesto. So we decided that given the, you know, I come from a family of plants people. So my oldest son is a botanist who works now for one of the biggest herbal supplement companies in the US. And he is the guy that accepts or declines an essential oil when it comes in.
Mm.
So he knows what's going on. And it's absolutely horrific, the amount of adulteration, etc., in the world of essential oils. And, you know, don't forget, we all know how much plant material is needed for an essential. So I made one decision, and that was because I really believe in this, in the power of aroma in the healing environment, I decided that I would make a commitment to never use essential oils in products. And that's just a personal decision. But I don't want to see them, you know, shoved in the bath, or, you know, loads of drops in a balm. I wanted to use them really with integrity, personal integrity. So I decided, and we made a manifesto, that we would only use them to smell, which is what we do. I occasionally will rub a drop on my hand to smell it, or put a little drop here, or anoint, but I don't make any products. And then on this journey of decolonizing the mother line, we went to India, because my mother comes from a mixed race family in India. And on this journey, I had already made friends via the wonders of social media with a distiller in India. And I contacted him and I said, I want to come and see you. You know, we're going by that way and I want to come and see you. And there was a very good connection. And, you know, don't forget, I was in the middle of putting the dots together in my own story, which was about India. And when I smelled the rose attar, we went into this distillery, which is like nothing on earth. It's like going back to the Middle Ages. I mean, it was so powerful and just beautiful. And when I smelt the rose attar, I felt something very strong. I felt that this is really the mother that I didn't have. This is the connection to the land, because it's the sandalwood, the rose is distilled into the sandalwood. And I never want to be without this. I need this smell. It's my healing smell. And I wanted to make a thread between myself and India that wasn't going to be broken. And so I spoke to the distiller and I said, look, let's work together. And he'd never worked at that that stage with, you know, a small company that was just about to start. He'd only worked on bigger levels with people. But we got on very well, and that's how it began. I just wanted to share these beautiful Indian aromas that, you know, the rucus, the sandalwood, I wanted to share them. And then because of my life as a herbalist and a teacher in France, one of my students was inheriting one of the best artisanal, the best artisanal distillery in France, all organic. The guy set up the very sort of rigorous association of distillers in France, and they only work in glass. They won't even put the plastic tops in the bottles. And it was one of my students. And so we went there when we were in France, and there were some oils that I just wanted to share. And the thing that I think is important is that when you're working on deep healing, so we pair as well. Sometimes when we sit for people for psychedelics, for example, we pair an oil with a psychedelic. So that person is very open, very sensitive, going deeply into the unconscious. You cannot put something that isn't right under their nose. You have to have something that has viridatus, that's alive. And it's difficult. And I know now even more how difficult it is because I see the work of my son. So I wanted to have access to the oils I wanted to use. And I wanted to share them mainly with our students and the people that do the type of work that resonates. And it's grown into, I have a brilliant, amazing assistant. We work together. We don't want to grow it. We just want to give these beautiful oils to the world and share them with people who appreciate them. So that's how Kathy's Attars. And even the logo, I have to say, even the logo is a really beautiful artist friend of ours who, in her own life, she was very well known in New York at the time in the 40s and 50s, or 50s and 60s. And she would never let go. She was always on it. And life threw her a curveball, and she became a paraplegic, quadriplegic after an accident. And she knew that accident was her psyche saying, you have got to stop. But she still managed to do some art, and I went to her memorial this week. She died. She's in her 80s, but she did my Kathy Zatar's logo. So everything about it, she was born on the same day as me as well. So everything about Kathy Zatar's is about soulful healing with aroma.
And really personal.
Yeah.
It's thank you for sharing that. That is I just want to share that it's something that's weighed on me for a long time about the consumption of essential oils. So what you shared, that's where I've come now, where I like to base my practice on olfaction.
Yeah.
I do not want to make product unless it's very special. And I fought with that for a long time, but I'm finding, like you already have, like there's so much plant material, and there's exactly. Such a voice behind it. You just need one drop,
yeah.
And it's very powerful. So thank you for sharing that and your oils and your offerings. Let's see. I want to go back to these questions. Like, you've touched on some of this stuff, but I want to touch on your deep work you're doing now with menopause, and you've become this, I feel, a really powerful voice. And I'm just pausing to look at my question now. So I'll read this here. So you have your transformational work on alchemy relating to womanhood and changing our relationship with perimenopause and being post and postmenopause. And culturally, we dismiss women even as early as in their 40s. And this seems to be slowly changing, I think, thanks to work like with people like yourself. And I feel our culture, we celebrate the infantile and the juvenile. And when I turned 40, I remember feeling empowered, happy. I did have a hysterectomy this past December, and it was super empowering for me, actually. And I just, I'm happy to be a woman now. And I like your thoughts on this. This is a big topic.
Yes. Well, I think that what's important to start with is that every developmental stage in our lives as a woman has to be honored. So what has happened is we've honored, you know, in a way, well, we didn't even honor puberty because many girls would really benefit from a ritual and an honoring of their bleeding. But what we did honor as a society is women as pretty, sexy, young beings. And what we've done is we've amalgamated that with women's true power. And it's not true at all. It's a biological function that, you know, we're pretty, we're sexy, we're ready to have a baby, we're fertile, but it isn't our true power. And what I realized is that a woman's life is very long. It doesn't end at menopause. But for many years, especially my mother's generation, it was really the end. Women then became invisible. They slid off the side of the earth into nothingness. They were considered sort of unsexy, boring, the old woman, the hag. You know, even the words around the older woman have been distorted. Crone means crowning. Hag has connotations with holy. You know, so then I started looking at really what is menopause, and it's a developmental stage in a woman's life. And these changes, these physical changes that we go through that are often seen as symptoms or parts of disease, are actually the way that our body is guiding us into the underworld. The gonadotropin-releasing hormone that increases at menopause actually makes us more psychic, more aware, more intuitive. So I then began to realize, as I guided women using the alchemical stages through these through perimenopause, that it's a shamanic initiation. Women go into the underworld, they confront themselves, they confront the things that have happened in their life, they go through their life with a very fine tooth comb in order to transform their life's experiences into their wisdom. And that's when they become truly mature, is that maybe I was raped, maybe something terrible happened to me, or maybe even great things, but I'm no longer those things. Things no longer subject me. They have been transformed through my relationship with them in the underworld, and they're now my wisdom. And the other thing is that there are two species of whales that are really the only other mammals on the planet that go through a proper menopause and live for many years after. And they've studied these whales, and what they do is an extremely important role in the herd, in the rest of the whale community. So they teach the younger male whales where to go for the best migration routes, the safest routes, where is the best food, where to plonk the mothers and babies so they're safe whilst they're nurturing the very young, et cetera, et cetera. And this is really where we need to use that as a model and realize that women can live 30 years after menopause, and our role is to honor who we really are, reclaim, like I said earlier, this part of the feminine that's been buried, that has been rejected, that has been abandoned because she doesn't fit into patriarchal society, and then voice. Once we've reclaimed that, then we're in a position to voice what is needed for the future. I have grandchildren. I need to be able to say, this is not okay. This is what is happening is absolutely not okay. These pyramidal structures of power over need to go. But I need to be whole and know my own shadow and have reclaimed these parts of myself to be able to say, and this is the way forward. This is what I feel. We need to work together. We need to honor community. We need to honor the earth, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And we need to be together as women to do that. So I think menopause we've been duped. Menopause has been stolen from us. And we need to take back the language, take back the rituals, create new rituals, come together and really reclaim the journey of menopause, which is a journey into the underworld, which is where we find these hidden, lost, abandoned parts of ourselves in order to become whole, in order to move forward in the world with a voice that counts. We are the grandmothers. We're becoming wise elders. You don't just become a wise elder by hitting a certain age. It is an initiation, like anything. To become something, to become wiser, we have to become initiated. So we have to honor that. And I would say the first thing to all women of the age of going through perimenopause is look at your schedule and make sure you take out at least an hour a day for quality alone time. We can't do this work until we meet ourselves. And we're always so busy. So that's the first step. It's time for yourself.
Would that be a part of an initiation, like you're saying, for some words of wisdom? So that's part of someone's way of initiating, saying, I'm growing into this. I need to do these things. This is part of the way forward.
Absolutely. That would be step one in honoring this process. And then I think women need other women. I mean, the groups that I facilitate and I go through the same journey with the women is just so beautiful to see women coming in, you know, depressed, low, don't know who they are, don't know what they're doing, not really sure of what the next stage is. And then they come out after working together on the alchemical stages and each one looking at their own individual stories, but being others holding space for them. They come out so empowered. I mean, I just love it. And I know in my own journey, you know, I had to go back and reclaim a lot from a very wounded mother line. And I found my sense of self, my sense of belonging, my ground, my voice changed. And now, you know, one of my French teachers said, and I think this is very important, to know yourself is without danger. When we're not ourselves, when we don't know ourselves, we're in dangerous ground because we're not grounded. We don't have this assise, as they say in French. So the whole journey of the underworld is to really get to know ourselves, not as someone who gives, you know, when we're mothers or even just if we decide not to be a mother. With our hormones are still working towards fertility. So we have a certain mindset for that. That's just how the psyche works. But then through this transitional period, you'll see actually with the energies of perimenopause, many women have hot flashes. Well, the energy of childbirth, the energy of our period is very downward and the energy of the hot flash is very upward. So there's a change and this change in perspective, this change in connection, we connect to the whole. And so we are still there to share and give, but in a very different way. First of all, it's a rebirth. Let's say it's a rebirth of ourselves.
It's just so amazing. And one thing you're touching on is like group work. And I think there's been a lot of things of women supporting women, and there's a lot of people that say that, but there's still that part of us that's told, you know, you need to be pretty and sexy, and there's jealousy. And I'm just wondering in the work you do, if you've seen like that dissolve when you're with these women and you're facilitating these groups, does that?
Absolutely. It's part of the work. I'm going inside because I'm worried about the wind.
Okay.
It's part of the work. Part of the work that we do is to look at how have we been internalized by patriarchy and by what I call the inner tyrant. And when a woman is very unsupportive to another woman, it's because she's living internally, she's allowing a patriarchal values and her inner tyrant in a way to be anti-feminine. So one of the big pieces of the work that we do during perimenopause in the alchemy of menopause is to look at, you know, after generations, each one of our lineages has had generations in patriarchy. The question is, what is the face of the inner tyrant that I've internalized? Men externalize often patriarchal values in the and the tyrant. Women internalize it. So they destroy their own feminine within themselves. So a big part of this underworld journey is to identify, how am I destroying my own feminine or forcing myself to be a certain way because I've internalized these patriarchal values in the form of whatever, depending on the woman and her lineage. And then once I can identify it, it's no longer controlling me because it's not in my unconscious and I can do something about it. I can do ritual. I can do visualizations. I can disactivate that part of myself. And then underneath, we find that there's a sacred masculine. The sacred masculine is there to nurture and to enable the feminine to find her true voice. But it's a big journey. You know, that's why some women take 10 years to go through menopause. This is not, you know, a little, it's a big, deep journey. And that's why it's so powerful.
You're touching on, you just said something, and I know this is part of your work, that a lot of the work is to work with the psyche and how a lot of physical presentations come from that unconsciousness, the psyche. Would you say that that's fair for me to say? Would you talk
Absolutely.
About that?
I mean, I think, well, this I think everybody will understand. So even if you're just working with essential oils on a very simple level at first, you're just learning, you're working on it for someone, you know, in your home, helping your family, you still need to have a model of the human. And the human isn't just a physical body. If we heal just a physical wound or a physical illness, we are forgetting that the whole psyche, which is the physical body, the emotional body, the mental body, the spiritual body, is affected by, even if it's a child who falls over and hurts their knee and you're going to put some lavender on it, there's an emotional aspect to what's happened. You can't just put the lavender. You need to put the child on your knee. You need to ask her what happened. How does she feel about it? What was she thinking when she was doing that? That's a mental aspect. Were her thoughts getting in her way when she was doing her bicycling, telling her she couldn't do it? Whatever it is. The whole psyche, and that is, for me, is the holistic approach. Mm-hmm. I have to honor all of the plant. The plant isn't just a morphology that's going to serve me. The plant has an emotional body, a mental body, a physical body, and so do I. And how do I bring those two together? And how am I already aware of the expansiveness of what it is to be both a plant and a human? And that's really, for me, holistic. That's my holistic approach.
I appreciate that. And something that comes to mind and I think of often is in one of your workshops, I remember you sharing the words of one of your teachers, something to the effect of, how does someone really know a plant? Am I quoting that right? Would you mind touching on that?
Oh, absolutely. So we can look at a plant as a commodity, and that's the problem with the earth. We look at the whole of the earth as a commodity. What can we get out of it? What can we, you know, pillage from it? What can we rape from it? What can we make money out of from it? And we do the same with plants. How most people say, what does it do? What does it do? Well, it's much more than that. It is what, first question could be, just on a simple level, you could ask yourself, instead of what does it do, what does it know? What does this plant know? And it knows a lot. And you could study that. You could take one plant. Let's take lavender again. So somebody who wants to begin working with essential oils and likes lavender, some people don't, but if you like lavender and you have a very nice, good quality Lavandula angustifolia from high altitude, then buy a lavender plant and tend it. And notice and look at lavender online and look at everything you can about lavender and look at what it knows. What does lavender know? And there's a lot we can get from that. The other aspect I think that's very important is, how do I communicate with that plant? So it's a soul to soul connection. So somehow, how do I make sure that my soul and the plant's soul recognize each other? And that's subtle aromatherapy. That's, you know, you can do it with the smell. I mean, that's a really brilliant thing about aroma, is that it's the only sense that doesn't go through the thalamus. So it's unedited. It goes straight to the limbic brain, which is very close to the sort of emotional center. And so you can allow, if you, I mean, I would say this to people, if you can just pretend that you're an empty vessel, a vase, and you smell the oil and you allow the oil to circulate within you without judging it, without expecting anything, without wanting it to be a certain way, then, and you just bring awareness to it. And then when you finish, you sit with it for 10 minutes. When you finish your journal, you will be one step further to knowing that oil deeply. They say it takes 9 plant voyages to start to get to know a plant.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And that's something I've really internalized through my studying and teaching, is taking words of wisdom like yours, and it's sitting with the oil. And often when I'm with people, I will guide them through a meditation of sorts, you can call it that, but like, notice your emotions. Are you feeling it someplace in your body? And you just have to try to shut off that analytical brain if you can, and notice and do it again and do it again.
Absolutely.
And it takes time. So to go back to, right, there's that, what's it good for? It's like, oh God, not that again, you know?
And I think, you know, the analogical mind has a role, but it's a role as servant, not as master. So once we've done this, and then you want to think, well, what would be the best way to administer this for this person, or et cetera, then the analytical mind can have a role, but not before. Yeah. I'm really worried. I'm sorry, but I think there's so much noise in my house.
That's okay. This is the great thing about meeting up over digital stuff. But we have a few minutes left. There's so many juicy things you're sharing. You've talked on the holism and psyche. And we, this is one. You kind of touched on this. But to go back to the alchemical work, this is really cool stuff. I'll just read this. How can we tap into the wisdom of our unconscious and have a deep relationship with it? And you have entire classes on this. You're working on your next book. And I thought about this question, like, Amy, that's not right. Let me rephrase this. What am I missing out on if I push away the unconscious and don't attempt to acknowledge it?
Everything. Because, and even science is starting to see this now, our unconscious is a much, much bigger part of ourself than our ego or our left brain. So the unconscious is mainly everything that we are. So as I, you know, explained, the psyche is the physical body, mental body, emotional body, spiritual body, and our connection to the collective unconscious. Well, every aspect of that has a big part of it in the unconscious. And the unconscious is much wiser, you know, than the left brain, even though our egos and our dominant culture want to think that the left brain is the master. It's a terrible master. Look what it's done. It's made us destroy our own home. The unconscious is very feminine, and it is in the deep part of the psyche that it rises from. And the way that I think is the easiest way for people to understand it, if you're just sort of starting to work with the unconscious, is, and I always say this to my students, as much as any other system in the body, be it the circulatory system, the digestive system, whatever it is, those systems have their own processes. So does the psyche and the unconscious. Part of the process of the psyche is that the unconscious comes up, or what is ripe from the unconscious, like a ripe fruit from a tree, comes up for us to look at, integrate, work with. And so it's no longer in the unconscious. And we need a different language for the unconscious. So essential oils are one of the languages of the unconscious because, as we've just said, they don't go through the thalamus. They go straight to this ancient part of our brain. So they fill us, if we allow them, with energy that enables us to access these parts of ourselves. That's why memories sometimes come up with an oil, with a smell. Yeah. It's a memory that was in the unconscious, and suddenly the smells triggered it. But there's much more that can come up depending on the oil. And so we need a new language. There are two things I think that are important to say. One is, when we're young, our job is to develop an ego and a persona to function in the world, to know who we are, to be able to be social. And then there comes a time where that's not enough. There's something more. There's something more to who I am. There's something more to life. And that's when we start to discover these hidden, invisible parts of ourselves. You know, Jung said this work is really for the second part of life. Mm-hmm. And so there's a language of the unconscious. Aroma is one. Journaling with aroma and journaling is another. Dream work is another. Aromas work very well with dreams. Mm-hmm. We need to learn a new language if we're going to work with the unconscious. But I would say no true healing can happen without a relationship with the unconscious. That's where healing happens.
And these things, like, it's doing the work, right? Yep. We have to be initiated. And then, like, you don't know what you don't know. So we have to be initiated. And let's say doing work like what you do is part of an initiation. And then we're given these
further do the work ourselves. So I just find it's like a lot of people like yourself, we just need to speak louder to talk more loudly about, we need initiation rites again. We need the red tent, right? I remember reading that book. We need these guideposts in our lives. And then there's these tools like beautiful plants and essential oils, right?
I think, you know, what would be great is even in a world where we taught children much more about honoring, even though, you know, they don't have to go deeply into the unconscious when they're young, but if we let them know that it exists, that there's more to things than just the left brain, right from the beginning through their education, then it wouldn't be such a difficult task. And there wouldn't be so many people suffering from addiction. Addiction is one of the ways that the unconscious controls us. That's the other thing that's very important. If we don't befriend the unconscious, it controls us. So, for example, my own journey was very simple because my mother lied. She came from India to England and she passed as white. Her sister didn't, she did. And she decided that she would lie and pretend that she was from this aristocratic English family. But so deep down in my lineage, part of the unconscious was this hidden part of us that was shame, you know, there was a lot of shame around it. So it was this hidden part of us. It controlled my life. I didn't know it existed. But I had homelessness. I had a good education. Then I had homelessness, drug addiction, all these things, domestic violence, all these things that I couldn't understand why. Because this part of my shadow was controlling me. Once I unearthed it and worked with it, and as I said, you know, put the dots together to realize what had happened, I faced my shadow. It was very frightening, but it didn't control me anymore. Addiction is a way that our unconscious controls us. You know, the guy that goes and gets money out of the bank machine because that morning he said, I'm never, ever going to take heroin again. Mm-hmm. And that evening he's taking money out to get heroin. That's not his conscious mind. That's his unconscious controlling him. What he needs is deep work on what are the things within his psyche that haven't that are in there controlling him and that need to be brought forth. So it's a very big and deep journey. Aromas are great for it. Aromas are really one of the best guides I've found for working long-term with the unconscious.
Yeah, it's so powerful. And that's, thank you for opening up and sharing with us. Aromas have that deep impact on us and they're so easy. Right. Absolutely. We have no choice but to smell. It's airborne. It's there. And you are there with the molecules. And it's very powerful. And it's just really amazing work. And I'm just pausing to think of my demons and think of, like, what are my habits? What are my hangups? What are things I'm doing? And to really acknowledge that. And like you shared, journal, dream work, keep a journal by your bed, take your alone time, and work with the tools. And hopefully this serves as an initiation for some people that maybe not.
I'm going to be daring. I'll say something. I think what you keep in your shadow is your power. You excuse your own power energetically. You manage it because you're you know, a capable woman. You manage it, but that's what you need to befriend, is your own power.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And what comes to mind as we're talking is the tree oils for you. Something like cypress or Atlas cedar, the big tree oils, the big spiritual, you know, tree oils.
That's fun that you say that, because Atlas cedar has been on my mind for the past year and cypress comes up a lot. it's amazing. Thank you. So time flies as it does, and I want to acknowledge, respect the container of the time together. And to wind down before I say goodbye, and if you want to share about upcoming workshops or anything like that, I just want to share that I'm a huge believer in being outside. We know I'm an introvert. I need alone time. I garden. I spend a lot of time alone. Like, what is your soul food? What are things that, if you wouldn't mind sharing, of one or two things you do to feed your soul?
I write. I mean, I live on a mountain at 9,000 feet. So my life is outside. That I live in extreme conditions. And to get to my house is very, very difficult. So I spend a lot of time alone. And my house is like a cave. It's an earth ship. So it's built into the mountain. So, and it's mud on the walls. So I live in, on the mountain, in nature. And I spend a lot of time here. I've been thinking about this a lot recently, how my life has brought me to this extreme place of living, which is where, you know, it is a liminal space. It's on the outside. So that is feeds my soul. And I have the most amazing views, which are really important too. And writing and sharing also feeds my soul. So spending a lot of time alone, I work with dreams. I write a lot, and then bringing that into the world in the form of sharing is what really, you know, and that could be just writing a piece, writing a blog, writing a newsletter, sharing a YouTube video, or sharing in a class. And the other thing that's really feeds my soul that I think has saved my life is healing my mother line and always honoring. I have an altar. I honor my ancestors deeply because they were, because of being, they were from a sandwiches in the northeast of India, and they were from a tribe, and my great-grandmother was born in that tribe. And because of the story behind it, they were ostracized from my lineage. And so my work in this lifetime is to bring them back to the center, which is where they belong. And I feel their support every day. And the other thing about soul is that the mother line for me is where soul comes from. Soul is eternal and embodied. It's very feminine. And so we embody it through the mother line, like Russian dolls. And so I think a lot, my life's work is helping women decolonize their mother lines, which is a lot of the work we do in the alchemy of menopause and in all the, you know, it comes up all the time in whatever context, but and that's really where the feminine is rising from, in my opinion. So this idea of healing the feminine is to do with healing and reclaiming what is rightfully ours, which is the earth energy through our mother lines.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, that really goes to things I think about. And it's because when we heal the earth, we heal women. When we heal women, we heal the earth. Oh, wow, Kathy. Thank you so much for sharing stuff with us. And I'm gushing. You know I love you. So I'm just a big fan. I always enjoy learning from you and reading your work. Is there any way, before we say goodbye and stop the recording, any shout outs about upcoming classes or pieces you want people to know about? Any offerings?
Well, I'm offering a free immersive experience. And I'll send you the link. It's a free immersive experience preparing women for their perimenopausal journeys. And it's a guided journey, really, to meet that dark, deep part of the feminine within. So I'm offering that on June the 1st via Zoom, and it's free.
Well, I will put that in the show notes. So thank you for that. I already signed up for that. So I look forward to further spending time and learning from you, and I hope others definitely tap into your work. So as we wind down, I want to thank you, and be sure to check out Kathy at Aroma Gnosis, as in gnosis, as in knowing. Again, this is all in the show notes. So I'm going to say, as I do at the end of every episode, ciao for now.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure and an honor to talk to you, Amy.
Thank you.